Welcome to From the Producer's Office, a series of informal podcasts with Opera Holland Park's Director of Opera, James Clutton. In conversation with creatives and collaborators, we explore the process of putting opera on stage and how the artists involved approach their craft.
Hello, I'm James Clutton, Director of Opera at Opera Holland Park. Welcome to From the Producer's Office. Today I've got with me three great artists, great friends, who have a sort of scarlet thread of fame and friendship and success through the history of Opera Holland Park. With Christopher Luscombe, who's with me, who is just, he's just put off for the moment that glory because of what we had this year, which we'll come back to that. But I've got with me soprano Ellen Pritchard, conductor John Andrews, and director Christopher Luscombe. Welcome all.
Hi, James. Lovely to be here.
Great to see you all and hear you all. Let's dive straight in. Ellen, I've asked you all on here for a particular reason. What are you all doing at the moment, you three? What are you all working on?
We're currently putting on a show, live opera in central London, Baliachi, with the most phenomenal cast of singers from the UK, with a phenomenal Chris Luscombe directing. I don't know how I managed to get him, but I did.
Good man. He's hard to get because he's always busy, Chris.
Well, he's in demand. And part of the reason why we're doing it right now is that Chris has got 5 days off before he goes on to his next project.
Very good. Very good.
And man. John Andrews then has got a reputation that we've all heard about. So I thought, right, I've got to get this guy on board as well.
Great. And when you say we, because you're doing the producer job on this, Ellen, are you?
Yes, I am. I don't know.
Welcome to the club. Welcome to the club.
Oh my God. I feel like I've aged like 20 years in the last 2 weeks.
Look at me. What do you think this is about? I'm only 24.
My alcohol consumption has gone up. My sleep has gone down. And literally, I'm not off my phone.
Welcome to my life. That's great. It's a great addition to the club. I'm really pleased. I'm going to stay with you for the moment. We'll talk about this in detail as we come around in circles, but why now? Did you just feel that you just needed to do something as an artist? You needed to get something on?
Yeah, obviously lockdown affected everybody in different ways. It was brutal, but also just seeing the devastating effect it's having on the performance industry is gut-wrenching enough. But also seeing my friends, you know, who have got children and having to go out and get jobs, and a lot of them have been successful to get jobs, and also there's a lot of us that can't even get a job interview right now to earn another living, you know, to get us by. But just seeing the devastating effect and seeing how these major opera houses and major opera festivals are being affected because of the guidelines. The guidelines are so strict and are changing at literally a daily basis at the moment. Yeah. And companies who have got overheads of employing people can't adapt quick enough. Mm. So I just, you know, I'd been mulling over all summer. And then I stopped. And then September, I spoke to my agent and I just said, the only way we can make this work is if we make something that's adaptable, cheap, with the best group of people I can possibly get. Yeah. So that if it does get cancelled, it's not going to be a devastation to us because we haven't got a theatre, we haven't got a company manager, we haven't got all those overheads going out. Mm-hmm. But also, I've got such talented friends and colleagues around me that haven't sung since March. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, if I can give a little bit of joy to my fellow colleagues and also audience members, mm-hmm. just for one night, then hopefully that might keep us going until Christmas, you know?
It's a really exciting thing. I mean, Christopher, you have been busy. We always say about, just for the, explain my introduction, we were meant to be working on The Merry Widow this summer with Maestro Andrews as well, obviously cancelled. God, I missed that show. We were going to have a great time on that. I'm still in mourning for that show. It will be back, but it was going to be great, wasn't it? But you have been busy in lockdown with some digital stuff, particularly and everything. How has it affected you all as a director? Because everything went, I guess, immediately at first.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking to lose the shows, you know, but I suppose we've all lost things. Everyone has lost stuff through this pandemic. And so you have to take it on the chin, really, and try and think of ways around it. I mean, I've been lucky because I've had, as you say, things online, shows online, and I've also been doing stuff at drama schools, and I did a gala last week down in Guildford, and socially distanced, obviously. Mm. And when I've done Pagliacci, I'm off to do another opera, Midsummer Night's Dream, The Briton, at the Royal Academy of Music. Mm. I'm becoming quite adept at doing socially distanced theatre. Mm. And that's exciting. That's a whole new way of thinking, of putting on a show. But it's terrible for everyone in the business. And, I'm fortunate to have a few things going on, but I think for all of us, we've lost so much of our living. And yeah. Some of my actor friends are just, desperate, really.
Yeah. Ellen was just saying there about this, just getting on and doing work. I think it's also about identity, isn't it? And about what you are, who you are and what you do. And it's not only a job, is it? Although it is a job, it's a vocation as well. So when the two of those are joined together, that's what makes the job such a joy. And when they're taken away, both sides of that have gone. It's a really difficult thing to make up.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think it's sort of easier when you're a director because you can. I've actually been really busy every day working on preparing shows for the future. So I feel I'm still a director because I'm sitting here with my books and plotting and planning. Mm. But I think for singers and actors, it's really tough because unless they're actually doing their out there doing it, they're not. They don't feel like they're singers and actors anymore. So it's really hard.
It's brutal because you can, I've sang a bit in lockdown and practiced, and you're kind of singing and you're like, oh, it's all right, the voice is okay. What am I doing this for? I've had some singing lessons on Skype, and then I got a call from an agent asking if I'd be interested in a jump in. Can you go and sing through that role? And I said, yes, I'm going now. I went, and it was a Friday afternoon, sang through the whole role. My voice was like literally just that little bit of motivation. And I was like, I'm back. That's Ellen. Ellen's back. She's got motivation. She's excited. It didn't turn out to be anything, but I had a whale of a time.
But I think that's it. You need a bit of hope. And I think that in the summer, I managed to get 6 concerts on in the end. I mean, they're pretty small things, but John did one of them for me here. And so, John, you've been conducting again. You did something at Grange Festival and for us as well. So it's been okay in getting back for you as well. This is another thing, another show indoors. And this is a great piece, Pagliacci. What do you make of this piece?
Well, it's just one of the most fantastic operas ever written. It's so immediate. It's so compact. There's not a wasted bar. I mean, it's also a kind of perfect piece for the moment because it's about a set of people, a small group of people who just want to perform, and they're doing so with no resources and they're traveling around, and it's about a company for whom performing is everything, and you do it through your tears, whatever awful domestic things are happening, whatever tragedies are going on in your life, the thing that gets you through is the idea of standing on a stage and giving people a fantastic show, lifting the hearts of an audience. So from that point of view, it's not only a really, really wonderful thing, it's also a piece for our time.
I thought it was a great idea, Eleanor, anyway, I think it is a great piece of that. I think also the central thing of the entertainer that's in tears and all the stuff. I mean, it couldn't be more of this moment, really.
It's sort of saying, that singers and performers do have a life off stage. They do have to pay the bills. They do have to live their life. And I think sometimes people forget that when we're out of the limelight, we do have outgoings. And if there's nothing coming in, which there can't be obviously at the moment, really, it's serious.
Yeah.
And I think so the piece does seem to have resonance for us.
It really does. And I mean, I think that, have you sung this role before, Ellen?
Yeah, I sang Nedda at Opera North.
Right. It's a great role, isn't it?
It's brilliant, but also now, rereading the text, I text Chris and John the other day and I was like, this is about musicians, this is about freelancers, this is about theatre, the text, I kind of wish I could give everybody in the audience a copy of the English libretto for them to realise how close this is to what we're actually going through right now.
Yeah. So where were you doing this, Ellen?
We're doing it in St. James's Church in Islington.
Lovely.
First show. Hopefully we might bring a few more.
Right, good. That's what we like, Any help out there would be gratefully received to make this show happen again. But yes, I think that with but also, so it's also perfect, I think, as well. And talk to Chris about this. Everything I've done this summer has been one act, straight through. And this, so this is not a reduction at all, because it's written as a one actor. So it's another thing that's great for it, to get audiences in and to keep them safe. As a piece, Chris, it's pretty tight, isn't it?
Oh, it's phenomenal. It's sort of like a Puccini opera compressed, isn't it, into one act, and it's just got such a drive and a momentum to it. I love the fact it's without the interval. I think actually the truth is that we all quite like a short evening anyway in the theatre. We're really honest.
I mean, one of my old phrases used to be one hour, or when we did L'Amore de Tre Re, 1 hour 30, no interval, the five best words in opera. But, you know, we all do, and I think, particularly at the moment with everything, and now the curfew and all the sort of stuff, I mean, 1 hour just of great entertainment with this cast is really perfect for its time as well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we wouldn't know what to do with an interval, because we can't do refreshments, and it's all the hygiene issues, and it's much better to just, you come in, it's 75 minutes, we reckon, this piece. So it's really brisk and a total joy. And also it's people who have sung it, I think they've all sung the parts before, so they're very experienced at these roles, and that means we can rehearse it very quickly.
Well, you've got Peter Orty.
Yeah, I mean, what a...
You should have heard Peter yesterday. He trotted in, walked up, and just nailed the aria. Yeah. And I kind of sat there shivering and thought, oh, God, I need to do some practice.
He's great, Peter, because he did it for me, and it was unusual, because I was hesitant about asking him, but he did the tenor in the Cav and the Pag when we did it. Aww. He did both halves, and he was amazing in that. Who else have you got, John?
So we've got the wonderful Nick Lester as Silvio, who is fabulous. Also in beautiful, beautiful voice. We've got Aled Hall singing Beppe.
Oh, well, you know.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I can say that because he's my mate.
Oh, well. If you've got a piece that's about clowns, then it's hard to resent.
But also, you know, if you're struggling for an audience at any time, you'll go out on the street and make people go in. That's the
But yeah, Chris hasn't met Aled yet, and we keep giving him like horror stories about him.
Well, that's how you did sign up for then, Chris, without the sight unseen. Aled's one of the greats, one of my best friends in the business, but also someone that is, you know, reliable is always seen as a bad thing by some people, but reliable is in that high level of performance comes every single time.
Yeah,
energy and performance, that's the thing. And, you know, reliable sometimes, they're always a bit sort of strange because someone's reliable. But he's reliable in the greatest of ways. It's just bang, bang, bang. You can come in, do it, and smash those roles, really.
Yeah, so, it's like when people say, you know, safe pair of hands and you're part six. But actually, the truth is, for this show, we need a lot of very safe pairs of hands. Yeah. People who can be trusted and relied on to turn up and do it, yeah.
So how are you rehearsing this?
So we've got a very short rehearsal period. So we're blocking it within 48 hours.
You're doing it in person, the rehearsals, you can do it?
Yeah, in person. Yeah. So we're doing it in the church, socially distanced. We've got a stage manager involved. We know all the regulations. I did a COVID safety course online just to get my knowledge up to scratch.
Yeah.
But basically, we're sticking to all the rules. We're not allowed to touch each other. We're not allowed to have props. We're not allowed to touch each other's props if there's a prop. But we're just, you know, we're doing it to show that it is possible to do something, and it is possible to have live theatre out there. And hopefully more people will go, well, if they've done it, maybe we can do something.
Yeah, it's great. And musically, John, how is it? What's happening musically on this?
So we are using a piano trio, so piano, violin, cello for this.
Oh, gorgeous.
So it really is, actually. You get a very period sound, and in this piece particular, there's a lot of, and apologies for the traffic noises around me, there are a lot of big famous cello tunes, there are a lot of big famous fiddle tunes, so actually we're able to have that authentic kind of sound, and it gives a richness and a depth. We obviously are in as difficult a position as people are on stage with the distancing issues. It breaks my heart that we can't give work to more musicians. It it's an awful situation that so many freelancers, even where things are happening, they're happening with so many fewer people than normal, that for every gig, and you think, well, brilliant, you know, it's wonderful, the 20 people on stage, there'd normally be 80, and somewhere in you have to feel for the 60 not booked, but we can only use the people we can fit in. So that's,
I think that's right, John. But the thing is though, John, when you did the work for me in the summer, it's the nature of, we were ending up, once you start employing 25 people or whatever it is, and they've got some work, that starts the microeconomy off. That just kicks everything off. People are just working again, and they're getting a little bit of confidence back, and it feels that they're back in the jobs. And I think that you've just got, it's just one of those things at the moment.
And I think with one of the reasons that we feel so passionately about this project is if we can show people that things are possible, then that's going to hopefully spur other creative minds to thinking about ways around all of these problems, so that we can create live performances. Yeah. We know they're not going to be we're not going to be able to do it the way we used to do it for a while, but every time someone does something, then hopefully that sparks something in someone else and we can begin to grow something back.
I think that's the thing though, was when you start doing stuff like this, Ellen, you know, you're never off the phone, it's the thing, but ultimately it is worth it because you see so many people's enjoyment in the company, and then when you get an audience in there, improve. That's what we do. You know, it is the big economic argument about the arts in this country, of course, and we'll continue to fight that. But the other one is that It's just the joy of life when we're performing and people go into a show. I mean, we all do it. Go and see a show and you come out happier or more moved or educated or whatever than when you went in. And that's just a great thing, to go in somewhere for an hour, particularly at the moment, and come out feeling better about everything. It's not to be sniffed at, is it?
Yeah, I agree with you. And it's just, you know, it's that thing of identity as well, you know. A lot of audience members will be regular concert goers and the crits, and, you know, maybe some opera producers will come or opera companies will come. And, you know, that's the ultimate thing for me, is that we're all feeling a bit crap at the moment. You know, we're all petrified. We keep having these new guidelines, you know, flashing up on their phones all the time. You know, we're all, you know, we're in a very uncertain, we're in the unknown. A lot of singers, a lot of freelancers are now having to think, right, do I retrain? What can I do? You know, what can I really do right now? And so, you know, like I said to my partner, do you mind if I just fanny about for September and October, see if I can, you know, achieve something? And then I promise you, I'll go and get a job in November if it doesn't work.
But I think, but it's really inspirational. As I said, when I heard it and I saw the cast, we want to go back to the cast in a minute and tell some other people, but you see the cast, you see, this is a very unusual time at the moment that, you know, people like Chris are always quick and looking at ideas anyway, because, you know, at the moment, this sort of the necessity to be quick, it suits certain minds of which you're one. And I think it does focus, it certainly focuses my mind about, okay, what can we do? How can we do it? Let's do it. There's a directness to it that sometimes isn't there in peacetime, as it were, isn't there? You have to work differently.
Yeah. And actually, you know, I think sometimes we can be a bit self-indulgent. We put shows on and having very little time. I mean, this is really tight, 2 days to block it. But actually, there's something good about a headlong rush to get a show on. And when you're dealing with people who are very experienced and professional, it's amazing what you can do in the time. I mean, one thing actually we should say about the show is the chorus, because, you know, initially I wasn't sure if we really could have a chorus for this, but we have. We've got 8 fantastic young singers who jumped at the chance to do it.
Fantastic.
And they're doing it for the pure pleasure of doing it, you know, and I think that's really encouraging. And to have that energy that they will bring to it is going to be a huge lift for everyone.
That's fabulous. Really well done on that. That's a great call, I think.
Well, they keep thanking me. They keep thanking me for the opportunity. And I'm like, no, guys, I owe you so much for doing this, you know? But I hope, you know, if it's a success, then, you know, we can take them along with us on this path that we're doing. But I think it is, you know, about working quick. You know, Rob Haywood, who's singing Tonio, he's a prime
example. He's amazing. Rob Haywood is amazing.
Phenomenal. You know, we blocked Falstaff in 5 days with Chris Luscombe. The first week of rehearsals, blocked the whole thing of Falstaff. And I'll never forget sitting in the rehearsal room watching Rob, because every single day there was something new, developing, changing colours, you know, character, everything. And like yesterday, Rob trotted in straight up to the pulpit and then started staging his, you know, the prologue. And I was just like, oh my gosh, how on earth have I managed to get this guy to do this for me?
He's a really class act, Rob. Mm-hmm. As you said there, you worked together in Falstaff, didn't you?
Yeah, one of the big attractions of doing this, of course, was to work with three of my Falstaff cast again, because it's Robert Haywood, there's Ellen herself, and then there's Nicholas Lester. So it just to be reunited with them, because we had such a great time last year at the Grange doing Falstaff. It was such a happy experience. And I was always really hoping I'd get to work with them all again. So when this came up, I thought, oh, great, got it. Brilliant. And Rob, no, he is a class act, as you say, and what a voice. My goodness, that's going to fill that church. So it's really thrilling, yeah.
And what are the audience doing? Are they sitting distance, are they standing? What's happening with them?
Yeah, socially distanced seating. So they can, if they're coming as bubbles, they can sit together. But if they're coming as solos, they're 2 metres away. But we have to have masks on everybody, obviously, you know. And also our stage manager, she's really clued up how to get everybody in safely, how to get everyone out safely. Unfortunately, we can't hang around and hug everybody afterwards. You know, it's just literally we have to say, right, the comedy's over, and now you guys just got to get out now.
It's like Leon Cavallo wrote it for us. It's sort of thanks a lot. You know, great.
The socially distanced sitting, though, when we did one of the gigs in the summer, one person said about they ended up sitting behind each other in our place. And I said, you can move because you're in the same bubble. And they were both like, no, it's absolutely fine. I can sit away from it.
We stuck at home together.
Okay, walked into that one. Okay.
But actually, I was worried when I did this thing last week and we had a socially distanced audience. I sort of thought it might feel a bit like a wet Wednesday matinee all spread around the theatre. But actually, it didn't. It felt brilliant. It felt like people had space to sort of stretch out. It was all like a sort of special boutique experience. So I don't think it's a problem, actually, having space. I think it's lovely.
You pay a lot to go to some cinemas that give you that much space. So.
Do you know, when we finish this, when we stop recording, I'll talk to you, all three of you, about something. But absolutely, I've been using the word boutique a lot this week. I think that's the way, I think the days of the big extravaganza and everything are gone for the moment. And I think that it's about minds that can work quicker and more fleet of thought and turn it into rather a thing of, oh, I'm missing all the stuff I'm missing, saying, I'm really enjoying the stuff that I'm getting extra, like the extra space, like the shorter shows or whatever, you know, the earlier nights home, all things that are part of an evening out to certain people. I think we have to stop apologizing for the things that we're missing and add value on other things that people are going to get from this. And
That's right. And in this show, that value is that we are putting the spotlight absolutely entirely on the human beings on stage. There's nothing but the music and those fantastic performers. And we're, in a way, have been forced into it by wanting to develop an approach to this that can always adapt to whatever changing conditions we find, whether this has to, at some point, have a life online or whether it's going to find its way into different venues as things change. But the wonderful consequence of that is that it means a theatre that is all about the performers.
Yeah.
There's no hiding. There's no hiding behind extravagant sets. There's no hiding behind props. This has to be about brilliant singers and brilliant actors making an engagement with the audience. And of course, that's why having Rob is a particular boon, because that prologue where he welcomes you into the theatre, you know, you say it could have been written for us. That prologue could have been written for us now to say, welcome into the theatre. This is what it can do. It can make you laugh. It can make you cry. We're going to show you an old-fashioned tale. and sit back and enjoy it.
I think obviously I haven't seen it because you haven't seen it yet, the three of you, but I know that at the end of that, that's job done and everyone's going to be into it and that's it. It's going to be a fantastic, fantastic night.
Hopefully. There's something, you know, like you were saying, we're streamlining. The only way we can get through this crisis is by taking away the frills and, you know, the costumes and, you know, everything. But it doesn't mean that we're taking anything else away from the performance. And by streamlining it, making it, you know, back to basics, no frills, sometimes actually there's something more exciting because the imagination on everyone and the audience gets heightened. And hopefully then they actually get drawn in a bit more.
I think it
reminds me of Henry V, the chorus from Henry V anyway, he says about the wooden O. You know, it takes us back to the globe. It's about simple storytelling, and you know, it worked for Shakespeare, so I think it can work for us.
Absolutely. But Chris, I think I might have mentioned this to you, but we didn't get that far, but I've often said over the years to directors, I mean, designers don't like me as much for this statement, but the single most exciting day of a normal, in peacetime, normal rehearsal period and production period is the studio run. It's my personal favourite day of everything. You know, there's a little bit of the Emperor of Austro-Hungary about that because I get to sit there. It starts when I arrive and I get a seat in the middle and go, okay, there you go. And of course, there's an ego thing to that. But there is also the thing you see in people like a couple of metres away, sometimes closer, and everything's stripped away. And it's just what the conductor and the director have done with that cast in the last 3 weeks or month in a normal scheme of things. And there's something so...
I agree. And I think sometimes, you know, you do shows where you feel, looking back on them, that was the highlight. And if only you could have recaptured that magic in the final production. Yeah. So, you know,
I think so. This, we're going to wrap up. So, Ellen, so how do people buy a ticket? This is quite late notice. I'm not sure when this is going to go out, but you're performing on when?
Saturday the 3rd of October, St. James's Church, Islington. Tickets are on sale on eventbrite.co.uk. If you type in Pagliacci London, it'll pop up. Actually, we've only got a handful of tickets left now. So, you know, ideally we'd love to put on another show. We might do. We just have to see what's happening around us. But the joy about this show is that now that we've blocked it next week, we can literally, you know, I can phone my cast up and say, do you want to do a Pagliacci tomorrow if we sell out? So that's the good thing about it.
Yeah, very, very good. And I think, when we put this podcast out as well, we'll put out the details for people, how they can get in touch, because you might end up with a waiting list or whatever. So it's good for people to still get in contact with you. Well, guys, have an amazing week this week and a fabulous performance on Saturday. It's such a joy to see. I've got the pleasure of seeing you all. We're not visual. We're going out audio only on this. But it's such a pleasure to see the three of you. And Ellen, particularly on you, even on a very distant way, really. I'm so proud of you for jumping on this and doing it. Because, as I say, welcome to the Producers Union. There's a very small band of us, but we have to stick up for each other. And as I said to Ali this week, it's shoulder to shoulder. You're doing that this week. We're there with you in whatever we can do, because we're all part of the same.
Well, I'll see you at the therapy centre once this is over.
Well, I've got a regular slot there, so that I'm sure you'll coincide with me. But John, Chris, and Ellen, it's great to speak to you. Thanks so much, and
thank you, James.
Thank you,
Pagliacci. This next week. Thank you.
Thank you.
You have been listening to From the Producer's Office, a series of informal podcasts with James Clutton. For more information on Opera Holland Park, please visit www.operahollandpark.com.